Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to the Care in Action podcast. Today, again, we are doing an online podcast because our guest of today's conversation is the journalist Namukabo Werunga. And Namukabo is based in Nairobi. A warm welcome to Care Austria and thank you for taking the time for this conversation, Namukabo.
Thank you so much, Andrea, for having me.
Before we start our podcast conversation, like always, I briefly introduced our guest of today. Namukabo is a trained journalist and communicator with a decade of experience in multimedia news production. Before joining TNH, which is the new humanitarian, she worked with the BBC. She was part of the team that pioneered the first fact-checking television program and a COVID-10 special program. As the appointed BBC storytelling ambassador for Africa, she mentored and trained the youth in the art of storytelling techniques. She's a multi-award-winning journalist who was named Journalist of the Year in Kenya in 2023. And now I'm happy to talk about our Forgotten Crisis report, which is going to be released in January 25, and it's already the 9th edition. And some of you might know that this is a ranking, an online media-based ranking of the so-called most forgotten humanitarian crises. And as a matter of fact, the ranking of 2025, again, all of the countries are in sub-Saharan Africa. And I would now like to ask my guest Namukabo in Nairobi, what do you think? Why do we even have to talk about forgotten crises first? And why do some or many of them receive so little attention, especially in the international media? Namukabo, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Those are very important questions that you have started with. We have to talk about forgotten crises, and for the reason that they are forgotten, and that means that there's a whole, you know, big population of humanity that are suffering because of the crisis that they're living under. And the media has a role to highlight this crisis, to bring it to, you know, international attention, to make sure that people are aware what is happening in these locations. And now, to your second question, some humanitarian crises are forgotten, and unfortunately, especially in Africa, there are many layers of reasons. There's no one reason, and I will start to answer that question by sharing a personal experience as an international journalist working for an international media organization. So back in 2019, I went on a reporting trip to one of these African countries that have neglected conflict or neglected crisis. And it had not been an easy journey. We spent almost a year just preparing for that for that trip. And this is because of the bureaucracy that was involved in just getting, you know, the paperwork, getting our accreditation, getting a visa and everything. It took a year just for that. And after we got the green light, we now took almost another 1 month just preparing the logistics, making sure that we are vetting all the risks involved, because there was a lot of risks. So doing the risk assessment, just tying the loose ends and everything, booking the flights, getting to know how we'll get to the exact location because it was in a remote part of the country. And we went and we spent a month doing a story that for me, very important story, something that had not been covered in detail in the media for quite a long time. I mean, people are aware that things are happening, but they don't know to what extent. They don't know how people are being affected down there. And we traveled back to Kenya after almost a month. And I remember it was on a Friday evening when we landed back, and we went straight to the office because we needed to, you know, take some equipment there and everything, and also just do backup, you know, normal things journalists do. And when the director of photography was doing his thing, transferring and everything, I just decided to send an email to our editors and colleagues, just letting them know we've arrived safely, and, you know, trying to set up a meeting for, you know, debrief and everything. And the first thing I see are emails from the country that we've just left, from the authority. I didn't even know they had our emails because we had emailed them so many times and they were not responding. So I was so shocked. I actually thought it's fake or something like that. But basically, they were revoking our accreditation. We were being accused of fraudulently getting that accreditation, you know, through bribe and all that, and it being fake. But the most shocking bit of that email is that almost all our contacts were there. The people that we had contacted while preparing for these stories, the people that we had talked to, the people who were being affected, our fixers and all that, all their names and contacts were in that email. And I saw that and my heart sank because I knew the magnitude of that. This was not going to be easy. If it was just like mere threat, just saying, you know, you can't publish that because of this and that, that would have been different. But there were many people here involved. So long story short, after several meetings and consultation and everything, we ended up not publishing that story. And it was heartbreaking. First, because it was an important story
The reason, Namo Kabo, I'm sorry for interrupting, but without seeing each other, this might happen in this conversation. But I assume it is the reason why you didn't share the country that we are talking about due to security reasons, right?
Yeah, it is the reason why I am not sharing the country because of security reasons, still for the people that were involved. And also, I think also after we had made consultation with the place that I was at that time, probably not, I don't know if they would want this to be out there. So the reason why I'm not sharing the exact country, but it is a country in Africa.
This is an extremely important message that you are sharing right at the beginning of our conversation. It is a message that some of us are not so aware here, because here the narrative is very often that there is not enough staff in media houses and not enough funding to go and do and tell the story, and not enough specialists for storytelling. It always comes up in the conversation that accessibility is also an issue. But I think it is really interesting that you, as an African journalist, highlight the accessibility and the danger and security situation that we all have to deal with, also as an organization who is inviting journalists. Of course, we feel a deep responsibility in terms of security issues. I think it's very interesting that we start our conversation along the line of accessibility, security, and also the image that countries, especially those countries that have to deal with long-lasting so-called chronic crisis, want to create to the outer world. Isn't that really a big issue?
It is a big issue, as you say. Accessibility is a very big issue for international media house. But there is always the argument that if As an international journalist, you are not able to access the area, or as an international media house, you're not able to send your people. Why not work with those on the ground? That is the question that many people always ask. And the thing is, this accessibility is not just for the international journalist. Even for the local journalist, it's hard for them.
Thank you for raising that, because we are facing restriction issues when it comes to journalist visits in many countries. To be very fair, not only in African countries, also in some South Asian countries. And we also had the idea, why not work more with local journalists and people? And exactly what you shared with us is the risk when you ask local journalists to cover the story, that the accessibility is not guaranteed just because they are from the country. In general, I think it's a good idea to include them whenever possible, because they tell their own story from their perspective. But I think dealing with a world where we face multi-crisis situation in many places far away only from the African continent, I think we need as many perspectives as possible. Would you agree?
I totally agree with that. We do. We need as many perspectives as possible. The perspective of even someone outside the location is important. But as you say, it is also important to get the story from the story bearers, the people who are being affected by all that. And even just apart from accessibility, as you say, the journalists down there are not immune to what is happening in their country. When you look at a country like DRC, for example, we have covered stories of journalists who are also, you know, living in camps because they are escaping the rebels, or they are being targeted for being journalists, or some of them have had to abandon their profession altogether and do something else that will pay their bills and be able to survive. So they also face so many issues, and they don't enjoy the searchiness of people who are coming out of the country for just a short period of time to highlight their stories. And if you cannot guarantee their safety, and if you cannot guarantee their livelihood, then working with them only makes their lives more miserable and doesn't really, you know, benefit them in any way. The story will be out, yes, but at what cost? And are they able to do it? So that is one of the thing. And you did mention cost. The cost of doing stories in these localities is astronomical, to say the least. And while there are some media houses that can afford this, there are many that cannot. But even those that can afford, there are so many things to think about. Do you want to spend all this money in a story when there is no guarantee that it will be published? There's, you know, or political censorship and all that. So these are some of the barriers that hinder.
Would you say that the situation is deteriorating in this media situation?
Yes, I would definitely say that the situation is deteriorating, especially in countries in Africa, as you mentioned, because there is also the shifting democracies. In countries like, let's say, the Sahel in Burkina Faso, Niger, Mali, the governance has changed. Right now, they are under authoritarian or, you know, military junta. So that means even the media crackdown has become harder. The working environment, not just for journalists or just anyone who lives there, has become more harsh. And this means it's getting harder. This year alone, in 2024, Burkina Faso had banned 13 international media houses. It's not like there are many international media houses. So when you ban 13, that is, you know, a high number. So definitely situations are not getting better. And unfortunately, I'm not so optimistic that the coverage of this crisis is going to improve next year in the near future.
Yeah, we have all followed this situation in many West African countries, and Care Austria is also collaborating in West African countries with our local organizations there. So we are aware about the problems. And I would say from a European or an international standpoint, freedom of speech and freedom of media is a very, very precious thing these days, even in all countries worldwide, not only in African or South Asian countries. This applies as well to European countries, to the US, to many, many countries. So the global unity, the global situation is very much in change, right?
Yes, definitely. It's very much in change. And what I would say is, in as much as things are changing, and in as much as there are valid reasons why the international media may not be able to cover these stories, we've talked about accessibility, cost, logistics, media crackdown, and everything. I do think and believe that there's a window of opportunity to do better than what is being done right now. One of the things that many international media or journalists shy away from is covering chronic crises, as you say, multi-layered crises, which unfortunately are very common in Africa. And there's also the argument that covering this crisis does not necessarily mean that things are going to get better, or there's going to be change. If Gaza is anything to go by, so one can say that is a valid argument. And even what is happening in Syria right now, for the longest time, there was no media coverage there, and therefore you can't credit what has happened to media coverage. But I do believe we can do better. There's the issue of inequality when it comes to covering geopolitical interests usually is at play for countries that are somehow pressures to Western countries. Unfortunately, they do get better coverage. I do understand the dynamics are different in terms of accessibility and everything, but I believe there's an opportunity to do better for international media.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And you mentioned the geopolitical influences that we all have to deal with. And one of them is that institutional donors worldwide, CARE is a specialist in channeling funding from institutional donors to countries worldwide where it's needed and where it's wanted. And we know that, and everybody knows that somehow they are also influenced by appearance in the media, not exclusively, of course, but if people are not aware and institutional donors are dealing with tax money, and if audiences in the country where the institutional donor is based, the public is totally unaware of what is going on, there is little understanding why institutional funding is dedicated for DRC, Burkina Faso, you name it. Yeah. So it's not so much an act of charity from at least my point of view. It is also part of foreign trade, foreign policy and geopolitical relationship. And when you look at it like this, then of course, we need somehow to know what is going on there. And then the media and also organizations like CARE, who sometimes can be helpful when we talk about accessibility, do have a role to play. Would you agree to that, Namukabu?
I totally agree to that. There can only be as much help as people are aware of what is happening. And we have seen that kind of, you know, donation charity, not so charity, as you say, being channeled to conflict areas that are always in media. When you look at a country like Nigeria, what is happening there still with Boko Haram and other armed militia is something that has been ongoing for a long time. And there are people who are living in camps. There are people who are living under very harsh conditions. And almost every week you hear that a village has been attacked, people has been killed and all that. But you don't see the kind of, you know, interest that you see in other areas, you know, being channeled there. You don't see the kind of attention. In fact, you rarely see that in international media. You probably have to go to local media to see something happened in Nigeria, but it's something that happens almost on a weekly basis. And mm-hmm. that is something where these Western countries could channel their donation, could channel their energy and all that. But it is not happening because the media attention is not there. So I totally agree with you.
And we also have to deal with a phenomenon which is very visible in the case of the war in Ukraine, that people tend to pay more attention, which is, I think, in our human nature, if the crisis is geographically close to them. But this high attention is not staying there forever. We see also in be it institutional donors, be it private donations, which also play a quite significant role, especially when it comes to so-called forgotten crisis, at least in care. But when a crisis stays for years and years, and from the outside, there doesn't seem to change a lot, or it even worsens. We see really a sort of donor plus communication fatigue. Is that a phenomena that you also experience in your context?
It is something that we experience as journalists and as news media. It is one of the things that informs whether a story will be covered or not. If something has been happening, let's say in South Sudan for a long time, we know this number of people have been displaced, this number of people have been killed and all that, but there's no development. It's just the same thing. So the news fatigue kicks in, like, what else can we tell about this story? We've been telling this story, but nothing seems to change. There doesn't seem to be any development. So it kind of goes down the priority list for coverage. It shouldn't be this way. That way, that stories need to be told for as much as they need to be told until something is done. But unfortunately, that is how things work sometimes. So, yes, even in the media industry, it works that way.
So let's unpack a little bit the mystery of storytelling, because this is something, as you might imagine, that is also highly debated inside the communication teams of a large global organization like CARE. What is mm-hmm. your take on it? Do you have to make the story as emotional, as personal as possible, that people are somehow hooked in all the crisis fatigueness that we face globally? Or would you say, from your contextual experience, it is enough to say, okay, thousands of people are suffering from this and that? What is the best approach from your experience?
Personal stories are powerful. I will start with that. Personal stories are powerful. Personal stories trigger action. Personal stories stir emotions in people, and people want to help when they can put a face to this number. When you say 5 million or 10 million people have been displaced, it is such a big number that nobody really... not many people. There are those who, you know, sit down and think about, so who are these 10 million people who have been displaced? But when you put a face to that number, it makes a lot more sense. So I would say personal stories are the best. It doesn't mean that putting out the numbers is not important. It is very important, but emotions do have a place in this. Personal stories do have a place with this. They're the best way to get information out there, and it's also the way to give power to the people who are being affected, because it is very easy for me to say 10 million people have been displaced. But if I get someone to say, I am among the 10 million people that have been displaced, and this is the kind of life that I'm living, that is very different from what I would have just done with the number. So yes, personal stories, emotions do have a big place in storytelling.
This is also something that CARE is following, but of course we are a bit in a difficult situation because how emotional a story can be. Because sometimes, and I experienced that myself, I have the privilege to visit many of the places that we are working in, and sometimes the real story is, from my context, even too emotional to really put it. How do you deal with such challenges? Because sometimes it's thinking of the war in Ukraine or thinking of the Rohingya camp in Bangladesh, you know, because I don't only want to quote examples from the African context. We know they are numerous. But how do you deal with this bias when you yourself think, I need the personal story, but it's even too personal to tell it? It's too much for our audience. Do you consider that?
We do consider that. And I don't want to say that I'm the expert in this, but one, a story has to be authentic. And we have to give, you know, agency to the people who have the story. If they're willing to tell the story, and they're willing for their stories to be out there. Of course, there are limits. When we are talking about people who have been sexually assaulted, there are some extents that we probably cannot go to, or, you know, cannot paint a picture, because we also have to dignify the people that we are telling their stories. We have to give them some dignity. We do worry a lot about the audience, and we do, as journalists, in many cases, we really think that we know what the audience wants or what the audience need. But I don't really think we have cracked that code, to be honest.
We take our assumptions, right?
We do take our assumption. We really do just imagine that we're really experts in knowing what people need to know and what people need to hear. So for me, I would say the person that I would care for the most here is the person who I'm telling the story, the person who's giving me their story. Am I telling their story in the most authentic way? Am I, you know, leaving them some dignity? And if the answer is yes, then I think that story needs to be told.
Now, Mokabo, this gives me the good opportunity to mention here that all the, it's not stories that CARE is telling, these are real life examples, that all the people that raise their voice in the publications of CARE, or you find pictures of many people, all of them gave their consent to the text and also to the pictures. This is very important, especially when it comes to children. And we really take care of that as much as we can. So, Namu Kabo, you said that you are not very optimistic in the first part of our conversation. But in your opinion, do you see any positive developments, if any, or maybe some innovative approaches that can help us raise the profile of these so-called forgotten crises?
I do see an opportunity in telling more the digital stories and using the platforms that are available to us in telling these stories. I think innovation is giving us, you know, like more power to be able to get these stories without necessarily putting ourselves at risk or even the people that are giving their stories at risk. Of course, there's also the challenge of, you know, internet accessibility and all that. But I think with proper planning and a little bit of facilitation, those are things that can be overcome. There is also an opportunity to partner with organizations that are on the ground. In some cases, I can actually say in most cases, there are international humanitarian organizations that are on the ground. And media, in most cases, usually shy away from, you know, working together, collaborating, because again, there's the issue of, you know, bias or the issue of, you know, autonomy, not wanting to, you know, feel indebted to an organization or something like that. But I think given the way things are and the need to highlight these stories, it is important that if there's an opportunity to work with people who have the access and people who have the ability to get you there, then I think international media should take more such kind of opportunity. Yeah,
it's good that you mentioned it, Namukabo, because this would have been my next question anyhow. And having been working in as CEO and head of marketing in Care Austria for 15 years now, I would say that we are in partnership with the global media. We are not in opposition. And it's our joint interest to tell global audiences, be it civil societies in the country where the forgotten crisis is, or in the neighboring countries in the region, but also globally, in order to be able to raise the profile and show the need for humanitarian help. Because so far, humanitarian help is a global phenomena that is needed, and is a good thing, because even if it's outdated and old-fashioned, some people in civil societies donate out of altruism, out of solidarity, but the help between states is really a powerful instrument, and to make this instrument useful and really to make it happen, we need to join forces, the big organizations and the media representatives, wherever they are, in order to make it happen. It's difficult enough, but without that, it's getting even more difficult. And this is the main reason why we publish every year the so-called Forgotten Crisis Report, to shed light on millions of people who really are at in very bad condition and who are really in desperate need of humanitarian help and interventions. To close our conversation, Namukabo, you are a well-established journalist at an international media house. Do you have any advice for younger colleagues who are interested in drawing more attention to humanitarian crises? Do you have any idea, any advice for them?
Yes, I do. But to be honest, maybe I need advice from them, because I feel like the younger generation probably know what they're doing better than we. The thing is, they're living in really good times. The media innovation right now is at its peak. The digital tools, social media tools at their disposal, and therefore they have an opportunity to put out the narrative, but most importantly, to challenge what for the longest time has been called news values. This so-called news values were developed, I don't know, maybe 100 years ago, when and what has happened is some of the barriers that necessitated the creation of those values are no longer there. We are we know, like one global community, it doesn't, if something is happening in Burkina Faso, does not necessarily mean that you need, the audience is there in Burkina Faso. The audience can be somewhere else. So the issue of the audience, is not really, shouldn't be, you know, like a barrier. The format of the news, it doesn't have to be, you know, like the journalists going there, saying this, saying that, speaking to a few people. You can explore other formats which are even easier to do, even to execute, more interesting to the audience. So I would say, you know, challenge these news values and put out content that resonates with the audience, content that people want to see, and most importantly, content that will raise the profiles of these people, the profiles of these places, and hopefully trigger the action that, you know, almost all journalists are hoping for. Yeah.
So this was a very good and positive closing comment. Thank you, Namokabo Werunga, for being our guest at the Care in Action podcast, the podcast of Care Austria. Our appreciated listeners, if you like our podcast, please follow us or recommend it to your friends and relatives. You will find it on all available podcast platforms. Care in Action. Thank you. Thank you, Namukabo, and all the best for your work. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was very exciting.
Thanks for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For further information, go to care.at. Sponsored by CC Real.